We are back on the Andy Finn Show, and we are talking about evolution and about Ben Stein. So let's let Ben Stein continue with his explanation.
But you know, when you say that, particularly you being in the show business community, you have one foot in there, that Christopher Hitchens, Bill Maher, who we just saw, are going to say that you're a primitive, that you're an intellectual deficient, that you have no right to intrude on the American secular culture by bringing up there may be a creator. And you say what?
I say there's a First Amendment. I'm allowed to say anything I want, and Bill Maher has nothing to say about it. And Christopher Hitchens, an obviously brilliant man, has nothing to say about it. In fact, this whole problem is about a violation of the First Amendment. There are many scientists we interviewed, many, who have been expelled from their job.
Okay, this is not about the First Amendment, all right? This is a total misrepresentation of this issue. He says expelled from their jobs. Well, first of all, what does the word expelled mean? You can be fired from a job, whether it's in academia or the corporate world. You can be dismissed for cause. You can be terminated and not renewed because you're not up to the educational standards demanded of your institution. But expelled? What? That's what you do to students. See, I don't understand the Wedowick, the words he's using. I don't know what they mean. And you can't see his movie yet, but let's talk about this First Amendment issue. This is not an issue of the First Amendment. You know, it's the same problem with the global warming issue. 99.9% of scientists are on one side on global warming. There is consensus in the scientific community. Could they be wrong? Yeah, they could be wrong. But there's a tiny percentage on the other side. And what the anti-global warming side wants to do is hold up that side, that handful of scientists that is disagreeing and saying, we don't believe what the scientific community has established as a trend, as a model, as a quote fact, as a theory that's been tested. We don't believe it. And so there are two sides to this issue. And, of course, we need to be fair, so we must present both sides. No, that's like saying that we've got a flat Earth society and the debate is still out about whether the Earth is flat or not. Now, I said I'd give you global warming. So if you're somebody that's a global warming skeptic, I recommend that you look at the summary reports that are out there, because you and I have not read the global warming literature. And we're not qualified to read it. Unless you're a scientist in the life science areas. I don't read those articles directly, but I know there are thousands of them, and I know that the people that do read and write those articles and have this battle, this discussion going on in the literature, they're on top of this, and they're in agreement as to what's going on, with very few exceptions. So I always have to defer to the experts. Well, with evolution, it's even more clear. There are fewer scientists out there claiming that there are two sides to this debate. And it's not about the First Amendment, because Ben Stein can say whatever he wants, but as Daniel Patrick Moynihan, my former senator from New York State, said, everyone is entitled to their own opinion, but they're not entitled to their own facts. So to say that intelligent design tries to answer questions that evolution doesn't, it's simply not true. It doesn't answer questions. It's essentially a kind of magic hypothesis. These folks that want to argue for intelligent design, these folks that want to argue against evolution, I'm all for it. Bring it on. But bring it on in the scientific literature. There are multiple lines of literature, and there are hundreds of journals devoted to issues related to evolution. Anyone can publish in those journals. You simply have to be able to take the heat. You have to be able to make your argument. You have to be able to collect your data. You have to be able to support your argument with empirical data, that is, data gathered in the real world. And you have to be reviewed by peers, that is, people who study this stuff. And if they say that, hey, they've got a good point here, they are bringing evidence forward, even though it disagrees with the established theory, it's publishable, that article gets published, and that's how theories change and evidence gets gathered, and that's how we move from one model to another. Scientists aren't married to their model. a good scientist will always switch from theory A to theory B, or model A to model B, if model B can be shown to account for more of the data. If it's a better approximation in the world of ideas for how things work in the real world, scientists migrate to the new theory. That's how it works. Today, we have hundreds of journals, thousands of articles in multiple lines of literature that support the theory of evolution. That is, people collect data and the theory of evolution accounts for it. Now, what Ben Stein is talking about is the fact that there are hundreds, thousands, maybe tens of thousands of pieces of data that the theory of evolution can't account for yet. Scientists haven't figured where on that monstrous coat rack to place those pieces of data. They're called anomalies. And there are always anomalies. They're data points that don't fit with any theory. What happens is you collect data. When it doesn't fit the theory, you tweak the theory, you modify it slightly until you have a better approximation of how things work. You account for the theory gets more subtle. It has more components to it. And you account for more data, then you test it again, and that's how theories get refined. Evolution has been refined over the decades, over the century and a half of its existence, to the point where it now is a very sophisticated theory, and scientists understand a great deal about how the world works, how the universe works, and how life has evolved and is evolving on Earth. And there's just no question in the mind of the scientific community that this model accounts for a huge percentage of the data. The people that want to argue against evolution say, oh, look, there's data on the floor that you haven't figured out where to put on the coat rack yet. Therefore, the theory must be wrong. No, here's the problem with that. That's not how science works. The theory isn't false because nobody ever claimed it was true. That is, it's an approximation in the world of ideas of how things work in the real world. Now, what happens is when a theory is so powerful, it accounts for so much of the data that scientists can't imagine another one coming along that could account for more data or better account for the existing data, we tend to start saying that it's true. And so for a simple shorthand, people say it's true, or they say it's a law, the law of gravity. Right? The law of gravity is not a law. It seems to work every place that we've been so far in the universe. But we don't actually understand how gravity works behind the law of gravity. We can predict what gravity says. We know that on the moon, the gravity of a human being is 1/6 of what it is on Earth because of the mass of the moon. We can compute that, and so you can go to the moon and you weigh only 1/6, so you can jump higher and you can hit a golf ball farther, and we've proved all of that. And the model predicted that. But what is gravity? They actually don't know. They know how to measure gravitational force, but what is its essence? It's not entirely clear, and that concept has been evolving. Does that make the law of gravity false because we don't fully understand it? No. It's the best approximation we have in the world of ideas for how things work in the physical world. That's what a theory is. That's what a theory does. And so theories are never literally true. They're the best approximation, and if they're such a good approximation that they account for a lot of the data, we tend to start calling them true. But they're never really true, so they aren't false just because there's some pieces of data that can't be explained yet, can't be fit into the model. That just means there's more work to be done. What Ben Stein is saying is, no, we must then look at things like intelligent design, and of course, intelligent design's not a theory. People have written books about intelligent design because you can publish your own book. You can get somebody to publish it if you can sell enough copies. There's no peer review. It's not regarded as part of the scientific literature. You've got to publish in the literature to demonstrate your point before any book you publish on a topic will be accepted by the scientific community. The books on intelligent design don't go through the peer review process. They don't get scrutiny. They don't actually collect data when it comes to the intelligent design. They hypothesize things. They say things like, well, the human eye is too complex. It couldn't have evolved. It must have been and intelligent design put together all at once. Well, who says so? Just because you think it's too complex doesn't mean it is. And scientists actually have found rudimentary eyes and indications that eyes have evolved. So they're just wrong about this. Now, Ben Stein says it's his First Amendment right to talk about anything. That's true. You can go to any university in America, and if you can get the young Republicans to pay to bring you in, and you can get an audience to sit there and listen to this drivel, then Ben Stein can go anywhere and exert his First Amendment rights. But you can't go into a science classroom and bring in magic like intelligent design and say that it's science. It's not science. That's what that court case in Pennsylvania found a year ago.
Who've had their website shut down, who've been denied grants, been denied tenure, because they wanted to question the limits, the boundaries of Darwinism and the gaps in Darwinism, and they've been expelled, shut down. That's...
Okay, so he got more clear about what he meant by expelled, by professors being expelled. Denied tenure. Oh, I can believe that. Hey, plenty of people get denied tenure that publish a lot in the literature. If you don't publish much, you get denied tenure in this country. That it's a very competitive system. It's as competitive as anything the business community has, because there's a limited number of journals, and there's hundreds of people trying to publish, and any given journal only publishes 5 articles, and they only publish maybe 4 times a year, so many journals. So it's difficult to get published in reputable journals. And so if you're out there espousing intelligent design, you better be able to collect the data to support your theory, pull it together, write the articles, get them peer-reviewed, and publish them. Now, Ben Stein, I'm sure, would say, oh, well, the peer-review process is stacked against them. That's true on this level. When you have a new theory, it's hard to get a hearing because people subscribe to the old theory. So you have to be persuasive, all right? Carl Sagan said it best years ago. He said, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. And what he means by that is, if you're going to try and overthrow existing theory, which has been laid down and established by hundreds, maybe thousands, in this case, tens of thousands of published scientific studies that all collected data, if you're going to try and overturn all that with a sweep of your hand and say, my book on intelligent design says it isn't so, you need more than an extraordinary claim. You need extraordinary evidence to back up those extraordinary claims. And these scientists that Ben Stein thinks are being shut out of the process and expelled and being denied tenure, they are not marshaling that evidence and making those claims in a persuasive way, or they would be published. See, it's not like the political world where we all put on our blinders and hold on to our opinions. Science doesn't work on opinion. It works on the basis of evidence. And it's brutally honest and brutally fair in that way.
It's not how societies progress. Societies progress by asking questions and having freedom of speech and freedom of inquiry. We're not trying to shut anyone up. Bill Maher can say anything he wants. All these Darwinist people, all these atheists can say anything they want. We would just like to have freedom of inquiry and freedom of speech.
Okay, when he says freedom of inquiry, trust me, they have freedom of inquiry, but you can't go into a university and say, I want to study ESP, and then not follow established protocols and claim that magicians are doing ESP and put forth phony data, right? There's no scientific evidence for ESP, and so there aren't a lot of studies published in reputable journals that support ESP because it's not a phenomenon that can be measured by empirical evidence. There doesn't seem to be, it doesn't seem to work. So if you wanted to bank your career on ESP in a university, you can write books about ESP and people will buy them. But if you want to work at a university and publish in the literature and you're going to say, I believe in ESP, but you don't have the evidence, you have freedom of inquiry, you just aren't going to last very long because you're not actually able to compete intellectually with the people that want to publish in these journals, right? So Ben Stein, as a comedian, as a actor, he can go out and he can get a speaking gig anywhere and say any silly thing that comes into his head, and people will pay him, and people will listen, because there are always people who will listen to every point of view. But inquiry is another issue when you start talking about the nature of science and the nature of a university. This is not a liberal plot. This is, as Stephen Colbert said, the fact that, as we all know, reality has a well-known liberal bias. That is, science errs on the side of going after evidence, not just making statements saying, I believe it's this way. No, no, show me that it's this way. Show me the empirical evidence that it's that way, and then we can talk. Then you can publish. Then you can get tenure. But this idea that he wants to reduce it to Bill Maher versus him. In other words, a couple of comedians or a couple of pundits saying one side versus the other. This is not, should we have this policy or should we have that policy? Those are open to question. These are scientific questions. And so we have freedom of inquiry. In terms of freedom of speech, you can say anything you want, but don't call it science.
And is this problem important? Well, is freedom of speech important? Is freedom of inquiry important?
Well, but it's interesting because the state of Kansas, not a crazy liberal state, has ordered its people, teachers, not to mention that there might be a creationistic aspect to the universe. And you're right. I mean, the academics now have shut down. And I could never understand it. Why can't you just mention in biology class or whatever class you want that there are theologians who believe a higher power was responsible for the first life? Because whenever I get these atheists on, the factor, and you probably know this, I said, okay, how did it all start?
Okay, let me stop there with Bill O'Reilly. So he says he can't understand why you can't go into science class and say there are theologians who believe that God created the universe. It's not science. Why not bring in magicians and have them claim that they can pull a rabbit out of their hat? Why not bring in ESP experts and wow them with parlor tricks? It's not science. Now O'Reilly wants to go on and say, okay, smarty pants, if you're so smart, if you've got science on your side, how did the universe begin? I think that's his question. Let me let him continue.
Well, we really don't know yet.
Well, the reason they're so angry...
Well, guess what? We don't know yet how the universe began. I mean, they've got the Big Bang Theory. I'm amazed at how well they have it down, considering they believe they know what happened in the first microsecond of the existence of the universe after the Big Bang. They got a whole theory that maps it. And it's looking like there may be it's possible there are multiple dimensions and multiple universes in multiple dimensions. It's all pretty heady stuff that I don't claim to understand, but theoretical physicists and cosmologists do understand this. And I trust them to run their models and see if they can ever figure out at a scientific level how it happened, because we know that the universe is governed by scientific principles and laws. There are rules that have been discovered that apply. It's just that the farther you look out in the universe and the bigger the distances and time we use, the rules seem to change slightly. And that's this pursuit of science, is documenting in the world of ideas how things operate in the physical world.
About it and so defensive is because the theory has so many holes in it, and it's such a weak theory that they have to be defensive about it to fight off what are going to be some obvious attacks on it. I mean,
okay, let me stop Ben Stein there. He's arguing now that evolution is a weak theory and that scientists are defensive, and so they shut off the debate. Absolutely wrong. First of all, it's not a weak theory. It's one of the most widely accepted theories in science, and the reason is it's the most well established. There are millions of pieces of data accounted for by the theory of evolution. It explains so much that if we threw it out tomorrow, if the sciences of biology and all the earth sciences threw it out, and by the way, evolution is a meta theory, that is, it applies to many, many multiple fields. There's the evolution of the galaxies, the evolution of the planets, the evolution of stars, the evolution of the earth and the structures on the earth, the evolution of the continents, all of that is a form of evolution, although specifically here we're talking about the evolution of life or the evolution of the species. But if we threw it out tomorrow, the evolution of the species, and said, okay, that theory's got some holes in it, so we'll set it aside, there's nothing to replace it with. Intelligent design is not a scientific theory. There's nothing to replace it with.
This is a theory which was a brilliant theory in the middle of the 19th century. It's the 21st century. There are a lot of questions being raised about it. Nobody had any idea the cell was so complex. We would just like to be able to...
Okay, he's claiming that science, we've discovered so much that now evolution has been passed by. Not so. When they say the cell was so complex, evolution, and there's nothing about we've discovered about the cell that doesn't fit with evolution. In fact, what's amazing about a good theory is that when you make discoveries later, if the theory is right, it fits in with the new evidence. Let's take, for example, the human genome, or the gene, the fact DNA in general. What we discovered in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s was that every living thing is governed by its DNA, and there's these set of chromosomes that help determine every species and every plant or animal, form of plant or animal life, including microbes. And that whole complex area of genes and DNA are explained very neatly by evolution. It fits perfectly with the theory of evolution. So contrary to what Ben Stein's trying to say, it's exactly the opposite. The more we discover, as we look deeper into the world of the atomic world and the subatomic world, evolution continues to be the best explanation for what we're finding. It doesn't contradict it.
Ask the questions. Maybe we're wrong, maybe we're stupid, but we'd like to be able to ask the questions.
Okay, do you think, though, that people who believe in creationism are being persecuted in America?
Oh, there's no doubt about it. I mean, we have lots and lots of evidence of it in the movie. And, you know, Einstein worked within the framework of believing there was a God.
So he's conflating several things here. The idea that people are being persecuted, again, I don't know what his evidence is, but my guess is they're trying to go into the scientific realm unarmed, without data, and just claim things, and they aren't getting tenure, and people are saying, wait a minute, this is pretty well established. Why would you just claim that it isn't? Because, you know, where are you coming from on this? And where people are usually coming from is faith, right? 49% of the people in this country believe that the Earth is less than 10,000 years old. Now, all you have to do is take a trip to the Grand Canyon, and you can see that river cut a swath from the top of the plateau down through the canyon. It was at 5,000 feet, and now it's down, getting closer to sea level every year. Right? The Grand Canyon is a geological wonder, and it's very clear that it was carved over time. Right? It couldn't have been done in 10,000 years. It took, I think it's 12 million years they think the canyon took. I forget how long. But bottom line is, we got almost half the country that believes the Earth is 10,000 years old or less. And scientists have a raging debate about whether the Earth is 4.3 billion years old or 4.6 billion years old. That's the range we're in. We scientists are pretty sure that the Earth is 4.5 billion years old, give or take parts of a billion. But there's no way that it's 10,000 years old. Why the difference? Because the people who want to believe that it's 10,000 years old aren't looking at the scientific evidence. They aren't looking at the thousands of studies that have been published in multiple lines of literature in geology and other fields that point to the age of the Earth. They're basing it on a sacred text and saying, this says it's 10,000 years old, approximately. I believe it. You can believe whatever you want, but don't tell me that it's science. And science has proven its worth because of what it accomplishes, whether it's in medicine or engineering or physics, the weapon systems we have, the communication systems we have, all of that comes out of the regular and predictable theories and evidence of science.
Newton worked within the framework of believing there was a God. For gosh sakes, Darwin worked within the framework of believing there was a God. And yet, somehow today, you're not allowed to believe in it. Why can't we have as much freedom as Darwin
had? I don't know.
I don't know where he gets this idea you can't believe in God. A lot of scientists believe in God. In fact, one counter-argument you hear from people who want to put intelligence design into science classes is that, you know, a lot of scientists who believe in evolution also believe in God. More and more scientists are coming to believe that there is a God. Science has nothing to say about whether or not there's a God. That is a supernatural answer. And like ESP and like magic, science can't prove that it exists, because science deals with empirical evidence, that is, evidence in the physical world. But there's nothing in science that says you can't believe in God. Now, it turns out there are a bunch of scientists, a percentage of scientists, maybe it's a fairly high percentage, who, because they have an empirical view of the world, say, I don't see the evidence for God. So there may be there is a higher percentage of scientists that don't believe in God than people in the other walks of life. But there's nothing that says a scientist can't believe in God, and many of them do. There are also many people who believe in God who accept the theory of evolution as the best explanation for the available evidence.
It's an excellent question. I've never been able to understand why the secular authorities in education, all right, basically persecute people who raise a very legitimate question. Hey, you guys haven't figured it out, you secular pinheads. You haven't figured it out. You had a lot of time. So perhaps we just want to let the kids know there are two opinions on this. But no, you can't have the kids hear that. Separation of church and state.
It's not separation of church and state. It's separation of science and pseudoscience. If you can't prove it scientifically, you can't bring it into the science class. The problem with the cases in Pennsylvania and elsewhere, that where people want to go right to the high school textbooks and say, we want to put intelligent design in the high school textbooks, you know, the detailed evidence about string theory that scientists are amassing, the notion that there are multiple dimensions to the universe, that stuff doesn't make it into high school physics books yet either. There's so much to teach that we do know, that we're pretty sure about, that the stuff that's conjecture, theories that are, you know, only 10 years old, 20 years old, unless they were brilliant insights and the evidence supports them very clearly, they aren't in high school textbooks. We don't take the first time a scientist has a new thought and rush it into high school textbooks. That's not how it works. You wait until it's established as principle and workable principle in science, and then you start teaching it to your children in high school textbooks. So this is not about separation of church and state. This is about what qualifies as science and evidence for education, and what is simply somebody saying, I think this is the way it is. We don't put, I think this is the way it is, in our scientific textbooks. Let me let Bill O'Reilly finish his thought, such as it is.
I'll give you the last word, Mr. Stein.
Because there's so much fear out there in the secular community that their position is so precarious. We're not trying to shut them down. We just want to be allowed to talk and think.
Just want to have all cards put on the academic table.
Exactly.
All right, Ben Stein, everybody.
Okay, I don't think I have to say any more about that. More of the same drivel. Claiming they want fairness, they want to bring non-science into scientific textbooks and into science class. That's not how it works. I'd love to bring magic in, magic tricks. I'd love to bring my favorite ideas in and call it science. It ain't, until I can publish it in the literature and convince a jury of my peers, that is scientific peers, that my views of theories of communication, theories of whatever, are the way human beings actually work in the physical world. That's just not how science works, Bill. Sorry.